No, you can't. Yes. Those are my Pekingese.
I'm taking sugary.
You can have sugary.
Welcome. Yeah.
She's
to
going
Cinema
to
Chop
die
Shop.
Very soon.
Watch.
I mean,
Shop.
No, it's Richard not sad. Fett. She's like 17 years old.
Oh, so it's time.
She's actually doing very well for a 17-year-old Pekingese.
I can relate.
The other morning, I ran into Stu and Ann on the streets, and I was like, yo, go Blazers!
Oh, yeah, I heard about the wrong number.
And the dog, like barked at me, and I was like, oh, shit. And so I called him back. I sent him a text message. I was like, Stu, sorry for scaring your dog. I guess he's a Pelicans fan. And I got a reply, ? I was like, is this Stu?
No.
And the reply was, no, you got the wrong number. So I'm going to have to work that out with Stu. He's a fellow Trailblazer fan. But this is Cinema Chop Shop. Welcome to it. This is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen. So why shouldn't movie buffs like us decide who is recast in those iconic roles? My name is Travis, and I will be your host. And I am joined, as always, in the shop, here in the shop, by our engineer, producer extraordinaire, and the Canadian in your brain again, it's Andrew Tay.
Hello.
And we are also extremely excited to welcome back to the show my occasionally frequent co-host, Sean the Brew Boss.
What's going on, everybody?
And a further description of the show would be in order. The tagline at the top says, watch, chop, retrofit, because essentially that's what we do here. We watch older movies, and then we hypothetically recast them with contemporary actors. That is not to say that we are in favor of remake culture or reboot culture. We're just doing this as an experiment of the mind and for your entertainment, right? Anything else we need to say about the show? People know at this point, right?
I hope so.
I hope they do. At this point, we're doing an energy drink check-in.
Good. I need it.
We got the blast! This is an energy drink that I was supposed to bring 2 episodes ago, but forgot them at home. And fortunately, Conan the Librarian bought and brought some energy drinks, so we didn't miss out that day. But He brought that pussy. All right, let's crack him. Very nice. All right, so it's not sugar-free, and they only cost approximately 69 cents. It's the best price.
Nice.
And let's try them. It's pure sugar.
Oh, you're hit with that medicine flavor right out of the gate.
It's for my rheumatizm.
Wow.
And so we've tried the energy drink, and that brings us to the Department of Corrections Department. I've got just a couple. For one, we already talked about this a little bit, but on the episode where Googe was on, for some reason, the movie Major League came up, and we talked about the phrase Wild Thing. And I said that the song Wild Thing was by Tone Loc, which is true, because he was saying, Googe was saying that it was by Steppenwolf, but he was thinking of Born to be Wild. However, the version of Wild Thing in Major League is a completely different song. The Tone Loc version, Wild Thing, refers to doing the nasty. Whereas the version that was played in Major League is originally by the Trogs, and it refers to a girl. She is a wild thing. However, Googe, I hope you're listening. However, the version of Wild Thing that was played in the movie Major League was not by the Trogs. It was a cover by a punk band called X. So take that, Googe. Take that to the bank. And then just a minor note on the promo, the teaser for this episode. I put the hashtag in the picture and I mistyped. So it said, Watt Chop Retrofit. There, I missed a TH or a CH. I missed some letters. But that brings us to the theme of the episode, right? Yes. What is the theme?
Divorce movies.
Divorce movies. We're going to break up right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm done with you.
In honor of National Ex-Spouse Day, which is today, it's April 14th. April 14th is National Ex-Spouse Day.
Now, what? And how do you celebrate that?
I think you do a flaming bag of dog poop on the porch.
Well, is that the celebration for the? Well, I guess both parties can celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Andrew, you also had something to say about this genre. You did not. You were not in favor of it, right?
Yeah, I just think it's an unusual mm-hmm. thing to celebrate.
Well, not necessarily celebrate, but examine, right? Cool, yeah. Travis.
Well, right. You know, we were both children of divorce at one time or yes, another, right?
I was a child of divorce. It happened when I was about 4 years old.
Wow, really early.
And so about the same age as one of the children in the movies that we're going to recast. However, my mom got custody of me, which is pretty much the norm.
That's the norm, yeah, which we'll address that later. But right? My parents got divorced after I got married, after graduating from college.
After you were a college graduate, you were a grown-ass man.
Yeah, yeah.
And your parents got divorced.
Which I think kind of sucks more than being a young kid, because then you get pulled into like the logistics of it.
Yeah.
And the politics of it more so than as a child, where you're just a chess piece. So I don't recommend it. But my parents got remarried.
They got remarried.
Like 3 or 4 years later.
Yeah. My grandparents did the very same thing. Grandma Patty and Grandpa Ralph got divorced for about 2 years, I think.
We just need a break, y'all.
And then they got remarried. Awesome. So there is hope after divorce is what we're saying. So let's bring it to the midnight double feature. All right. Who do you want to go with? For your first pick for your Midnight Double Feature show.
I hope I didn't steal yours, because I love mine and I think you will too. My first Midnight Double Feature is The Royal Tenenbaums.
I did not pick this, but it is great. It's one of the last appearances of Gene Hackman.
Yes, and it's a 2001 Wes Anderson film. If you watch the trailer for this, you think it's going to be like a slapstick comedy. Which
it's totally not.
It does have some comedic elements, yeah, but it
as did, do all of his films.
But it did not prepare audiences for the Wes Anderson style. Right. And I could see how a lot of people would be turned off immediately if they went in thinking it was going to be a laugh riot.
This was kind of his breakthrough film. It though, was. Right?
Yeah.
Before that, he did Bottle Rocket.
Exactly.
Am I forgetting something before Royal Tenenbaums?
I think you're right. Yeah. I could be very wrong, but. But it had more to do with the children and their mm-hmm. dealing with the divorce.
Uzi and Ari.
Yeah. And their strange relationship.
All right.
My second is going to be Richard Linklater's Tour de Force, Boyhood.
Boyhood, yes. Which, it took 7 years to make? No, longer.
Longer because
like
the
12
kid,
years.
Yeah, yeah. It was a long it was a long play.
It was a long haul. It was the long con.
But divorce played heavily in the
it
plot
very
lines.
Much did. You had to deal Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette.
Right. So they they remained present in the movie in their respective lives, and I think it was a kind of a realistic look at modern day divorce and dealing with children, at least as level headed parents can be.
Right. They were very what do you call it? Amicable.
Yeah.
They were very amicable. All right. Those are two very good movies. And I think that they fit the theme and they would go really well back to back in a double feature. However, neither of those were mine.
Okay,
didn't pick
good.
Either of mine.
Well, there are plenty to choose from.
So first, I'm going to go with Mrs. Doubtfire. Robin Williams playing a transvestite. That's still a politically correct term. He was dressing as a woman. He was being the nanny for his children during the divorce from his wife. No?
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. I did...
You didn't realize it was a divorce movie?
No. I just didn't like the film.
You didn't like Mrs. Doubtfire?
How in the world would his ex-wife not know that was him?
Because he did a really good job
did
in
he?
Acting, in
did
character.
He? Did he
And
know?
All that plastic makeup on him. And then I'm going with Liar Liar. About 10 years later, Mrs. Doubtfire came out in 1993. Liar Liar in 97. No, 4 years later. And they both have in the mid-70s on Rotten Tomatoes. Mrs. Doubtfire was directed by Chris Columbus, not the man who discovered this great continent. He didn't either. But he also was very involved in the Harry Potter franchise. He directed the first two.
Yeah.
And he was a producer on further installments in that series. Liar Liar with Jim Carrey.
I like that one.
Pretty good divorce movie.
Yeah.
The Claw. It was directed by Tom Shadyac? Shadyac? S-H-A-D-Y-A-C. I don't know how to pronounce it, but he did have a working relationship with Jim Carrey. He directed Ace Ventura, the first one, and also he directed Evan Almighty, which was the follow-up to Bruce Almighty. He was a producer on both, though. So Liar Liar from 1997 and Mrs. Doubtfire, they kind of rhyme. Liar Liar, Mrs. Doubtfire.
And that's a good double feature, a good coupling. Yeah, yeah, a lot of laughs.
That couple might need to get divorced, though. All right, so moving beyond the midnight double feature, we're going into our feature segment, right? Our recast, part one, is kind of a tearjerker. This movie was not a laugh riot by any means, unless you count the ice cream scene. It's Kramer versus Kramer from 1979. It was directed by Robert Benton and has an 88% on Rotten Tomatoes. Robert Benton also directed a movie that I previously mentioned on the show, Nadine, with Jeff Bridges and Kim Basinger. He also directed one of the movies I'm going to mention in my movie marathon check-ins. We won't get to that yet. This movie had a record-setting at the time, 9 Academy Award nominations, and it won 5. It won, oh, I didn't write it down. It won Best Actor, Best Supporting Actress, Best Director, Best Screenplay, and something else. If I'm wrong, correct me. And so we've got two roles. We've got the role of Meryl Streep, the disenchanted wife of a workaholic, right?
Yeah, Joanna.
Yeah, so Meryl Streep plays Joanna Kramer. She was 30 at the time. And then her husband, the guy who is more enamored with his career than with his family. That's really the reason that they part ways, right? Mm-hmm. Portrayed by Dustin Hoffman as Jack Kramer.
Ted.
Jack. Jack Kramer. Is it not Jack?
We'll agree to disagree.
Is it Ted? Really? I wrote down Jack. Okay. Anything else we need to say about the plot of the movie?
Well, you know, it came out in 79, which means it was right on the cusp of the 80s, you know, me generation. And the dialogue addressed it about, you know, not being macho. Macho's out of fashion. It's mm-hmm. more about being sensitive. And,
yeah.
and at the time, you know, being the stand-up dad who maintained custody of the kid was not the norm in divorce situations back then. I feel like
Dustin Hoffman's character really kind of rode the line between macho and sensitive.
I agree.
Because he was bringing home the bacon. He said that several times in the film. Who's got to bring home the bacon? Mm-hmm. But he also fought for custody of his child, which is kind of a maternal role.
Before we jump into the recast, I will talk about Billy, the son.
Yeah.
You know, growing up in the 70s and being a child of the 80s, I always heard about Kramer versus Kramer and how adorable this kid was. I watched it just recently for the very first time, and it was eating at me. I said, this kid's not adorable. He's not charming. I want to punch him in the face.
And you recognize him from...
And then I figured it out. He's the snot-nosed asshole brother from 16 Candles.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Sofa City, sweetheart. What's his name in
16 Candles?
Mike.
Mike, the asshole brother. All right. So let's get into our recast, right?
Sure.
We've got Meryl Streep coming up first. She was 30 at the time. And with this one, we're going to do the couples together, right?
Sure.
And go ahead and give me yours, because mine are on the same page.
Okay, no problem. So Meryl, she appears briefly at the beginning and has her little breakdown. And she comes back at the end.
Yeah, she's in the first act and the third act.
Yeah, which is kind of an odd way to do that. But it works, I guess, because it really let Dustin Hoffman kind of own the show.
Yes.
But I went with someone who I remember from Jurassic World. She played the role of Claire. She was also in The Help as Hilly. Most recently I recognized her from an episode of Black Mirror. It's Bryce Dallas Howard. It's Ron Howard's daughter.
Which season of Black Mirror? Because I've seen season one and season four.
I think she's in season three.
Okay. Go back and look at it.
Yeah.
All of them are good. This is a recommendation to the listeners. Black Mirror is amazing. It's not just a reference to your phone and how it looks like a black mirror, but it's also a dark reflection of our culture and society. All right.
That's deep, man.
It's really deep. And who's your Dustin Hoffman?
All right, Dustin Hoffman's tough to recast, which we've talked about before, I think, on other roles. But I went with somebody who does not resemble him. However, his most known role, he has played a father who has taken a lot of burden and has gone through a lot of stuff.
Uh-huh.
He's fought alcoholism. He's dealt with depression.
This Is Us?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm talking about Milo Ventimiglia.
Yeah, he's good.
And I would like him to play my Dustin Hoffman. I think he could do that vulnerable aspect of the role very well.
Very much so. All right. So with mine, I went very real world. I went with a celebrity acting couple who went through a much publicized divorce. And they are Ryan Phillippe and Reese Witherspoon. They were married right after they did Cruel Intentions and then went through a very tumultuous divorce in 2006. So you can see them next to my two.
Yeah, I can see Reese. Tell me more about Ryan and his roles that you think. Tell me about him, because I know the name, but I can't place anything that I remember him from.
So he's in a good psychological thriller called The Eye Inside.
Okay,
you should check that one out. Also, he was married to Reese Witherspoon, and they got divorced.
Okay, awesome, and
that will do it for that.
Okay.
Are we done with the recast of Kramer versus Kramer? What else should we say about this? It's a solid movie.
Yes. I have something to say. My favorite girl's in it, and she's butt naked.
Oh, who's your favorite girl?
What's her name? From Poltergeist, and
I remember her being butt naked, but I don't know her name.
Yeah, JoBeth Williams.
That was JoBeth Williams?
Yes, it is. No JoBeth Williams, front and back.
Yeah, she and Mr. Kramer are having a friends with benefits session.
It was just a hookup.
Yeah.
And she had to run to the restroom. And
as she walks into the hallway,
the son's just standing there in the hall looking at her, and he starts asking her questions. And the nudity is no big deal to the kid, but she's just standing there all awkward and stuff. It's cute.
It was cute.
And then the supporting actress that played the friend of both of them, she kind of got caught in the middle during the divorce proceeding. Was that Margaret Phelps, played by Jane Alexander?
Do you have a recast for her?
No, not at all. But I just want to comment that she was great. I mean,
she was really good. There's a lot of other really good actors in this movie. We just can't get to everybody, you know? Sorry, JoBeth Williams. We didn't recast you today. All right, so that will wrap us up on Kramer versus Kramer. And moving it along to the intermission. All right, Cinema Chop Shoppers, this is your host Travis, just chiming in here at intermission to remind you about our online presence. We are on Facebook. We're facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We post things about upcoming episodes as well as the Chop Shopper Challenge, where you, the listeners, can pick some roles to recast yourselves.
We're also on Twitter. We do some similar things on there. The Chop Shopper Challenge check-ins. We are at Cinema Chop Shop on Twitter. If you ever want to comment on the show, that would be a good place to do it, as well as our email address. We are cinemachopshop@gmail.com. And we take suggestions for future episodes and any sort of commentary on the show. If you have corrections, if you notice some things that I say that might not necessarily be true, please let us know about that, because we do, the Department of Corrections Department. Once again, thank you, the listeners, for bearing with us during the intermission, and thank you for listening to the show. Remember, you can rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes, or like us on whatever platform it is that you listen to your podcasts. And also, please remember to watch, shop, retrofit. All right, so what we're saying is that even though divorce is a kind of negative concept to think about, it's also something that is a reality in the world, the real world. Most of my contemporaneous peers have experienced divorce or are the children of divorce. And I also think that that is why a lot of people my age are either not going to get married, or they get married and they will never, ever get divorced because their parents did that and it had an effect on them. Sean?
Yeah, I agree. My wife and I had our little rough patches early in our marriage, and, you know, it's like, I'll be damned if we're going to split up. You know, it's like,
yeah,
we just want to prove it wrong. Buck the trend, you know?
So. Buck the trend. So that brings us back from the intermission. Thank you guys for bearing with us. We just had to sort some shit out. And when we come back from intermission, we like to do a beer check-in, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So what do we got?
I'm bringing one out for the episode. It's from Edmund's Oast in Charleston.
Oh, great place. High recommendations for Edmund's Oast.
This is a Session India Pale Ale brewed with 100% Idaho 7 hops.
Ah, a little bit of Northwest action.
But the name of the beer is Singular.
Oh, because if you get divorced, you will be
Singular.
Singular. All right. And so Edmund's Oast, they're canning now. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Totally, and they're really pumping out a lot of beer these days.
Also, the food at Edmund's Oast is fantastic. Every time my wife, my lovely wife, and I go to Charleston, we have to go to Edmund's Oast. All right. And we've got another beer, too. It's the freshest beer that's on tap at seminarbrewing.com. It is the Single Hop Cascade, which I'm going to go grab right now. And Sean, tell us a little bit more about that.
The Cascade is the first of the series from our Single Hop series. Every beer has the same base. We just change out the hop profile in each one, and Cascade was the first. But we had a lot of people who requested it to come back, so we brewed another batch. And now it's back on tap at Seminar Brewing.
Guess who's back?
Cascade's one of the, as they're called, sea hops. Cascade, Columbus, and Centennial.
What about Citra?
Citra is a later hop in terms of how long it's been around. But Cascade, Centennial, and Columbus have been around forever. And those guys are, you know, mainstays in beer production. But good, clean flavor.
It's not delicious.
I think we should only drink the Sea Hop beers going forward.
No.
And we should rename the podcast Cinema Sea Hop
Shop. Cinema Sea Hop Shop. That's beautiful. Also, I have an affinity for just the word Cascade, because that's my homeland, man. I'm from the foothills of the Cascades, the Willamette Valley. In Silverton, Oregon.
And I applaud you for saying Willamette correctly.
Oh, that's how you say it. If you say it another way, you will get punched in the face.
That's right.
Also, I've never been punched in the face.
We can change that. I say it all the time.
As of yet, I've never been punched in the face.
Save it for the live show.
Oh, yes!
Live show's coming up, you guys. All right, so after the beer check-in, we are going into the 2018 movie marathon, and Sean is running away with it. I kind of fucked up and only watched one movie over my spring break because I was having so much fun.
You slacker.
But what number are you on?
I'm at 145 right now.
145. I think I'm at 138. So you're seven ahead of me. That's incredible. All right, so give me one.
All right. Did you discuss The Little Hours on the podcast?
We did previously, okay. But tell me about what you think about it, because you just saw it.
I stumbled across this, and I loved it. It stars some of my favorite actors and actresses. Mm-hmm. We've got Aubrey Plaza, yes.
Kate Micucci and Aubrey Plaza.
And then, let's see, who else have we got?
Fred
Armisen's in it. That's right. And Nick
Offerman, the girl from The Office. Who we don't remember her name right now, but she's married to Dave Franco.
Not The Office.
Allison Brie.
Community.
Sorry, yes. Not The Office. But, Department of Corrections.
It's a farce of Shakespearean proportions. It's just ridiculous shenanigans.
It was really good.
Yeah, it was entertaining.
I watched it twice, and then I tried to show it to the Googe, and he was like, I'm just not interested in this. So, sorry, Googe.
You're overruled, buddy.
All right, so my first one that I'm going to recommend, not recommend, but check in, is number 136 on my movie check in. It's called It's a Bird. It's a Plane. It's Superman from 1975, and it was the television adaptation of a 1960s campy musical version of the Superman story. Really, really crazy, really bad, but worth watching. Nice. Check it out.
Well, speaking of really bad, and I'll throw in one more check-in. Yeah. And it was a movie from 1984 called Fear City.
Fear City.
And it stars Tom Berenger, Melanie Griffith, Ray Don Chong, and Billy Dee Williams.
That's a good cast. But what ethnicity is
Tom Berenger?
Tom Berenger
plays an Italian hitman.
He's not Italian.
He was a former boxer who got out of the business because he killed a man in the ring. Just like Butch in Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
But the best part of it is Melanie Griffith plays...
He could have been a contender.
No. But Melanie Griffith plays a stripper. And as I told you last night...
Moves.
I've seen marionette puppets with better stripper moves. This woman has nothing.
There's a scene where she's trying to
She's like on her back, and she's supposed to be like writhing her feet together, like in a very sexy kind of way.
However,
but it's more like they're like two wooden blocks just kind of clopping together. It's really bad.
That's good Foley. Do it again. Ooh. Very good.
Those are my hands.
That's kind of like the sound of two coconuts clapping together.
Yes. But Billy Dee Williams plays the investigator, the hard-nosed investigator, who used to work in Vice, so he knows all these people in the stripper industry.
Did he plug
Colt 45?
Colt 45.
He did not. I was waiting for it, though. It did not happen.
Just for our younger listeners, Billy Dee Williams played Lando Calrissian in the original Star Wars trilogy, and he will very soon be portrayed by Donald Glover in Solo, A Star Wars Story.
How you doing, Chewbacca?
All right, so the next one I'm going to mention is called Bad Company from 1972. And it was directed by the same guy who directed Kramer versus Kramer, who was Robert Benton. And it's a very early performance from Jeff Bridges. He plays a con man who randomly spouts racial epithets and also will rob you blind. So it's not a very enamoring character that he's playing, but the one big payoff in the movie, for me at least, was the two or three scenes that he had with the Big Lebowski, the guy who plays the actual Jeffrey Lebowski in The Big Lebowski, is also in Bad Company. He plays like a Western crime boss. I'm not recalling his name, his actual real world name at the moment, but...
Was there a rug, and did it tie the room together?
It really tied the room together, good. But no, they're in the West. They're in the frontier. There's no rugs.
They had rugs.
And you got one more.
Oh, I'll do one more. I watched The Lion King, the Al Hirschfeld story.
The Lion King.
Lion King. Al Hirschfeld's the
character. He's the man.
He's the caricaturist who did all of the drawings of all of the Broadway elite and actors of the time. If you've ever seen these restaurants in New York with the portraits, yes, along the walls, Al is the one who drew them. He was the cartoonist for the New York Times for the Broadway section. So
he's one of my favorite illustrators. Also, the section of Fantasia 2000 where they do Rhapsody in Blue is all illustrated by Al Hirschfelder.
This guy was amazing. I highly recommend watching it, if only to make you feel like you've got a lot of life left to live. The guy was cartooning up until his 90s, and art nerd stuff. I had always sworn that his lines had to have been done by brush because it was so smooth. Majority of his lines were done by quill and India ink.
Yeah.
And that blew me away.
Very good. All right, so... have you done three?
That's three.
All right, one more for me. I gotta give a shout out to A Quiet Place, directed by John Krasinski. It's out right now in theaters. It's amazing. And I think my official review was John Krasinski has finally given us the Tremors sequel that we all deserved. And if you don't know what that means, go watch Tremors and then watch A Quiet Place. All right. So with that, we will move it along to the recast continued part two, the sequel. And we're going with a movie called First Wives Club, which surprisingly is not about Hillary Clinton, Barbara Bush, and Jackie Onassis. It's not about the former first ladies of the United States, which is what I thought going into it. But it's about women of a certain age who are divorced and going through the trials and tribulations that involves. Sean, tell us what you think about this movie.
I'm not a huge fan of the movie. It came out in 96, which I think it probably came out 5 or 6 years too late. The plot of the movie, you've got these women whose husbands have all cheated on them, yeah, and have all left them for younger models. And yes, that's despicable. However, the idea that this is, you know, this is movie worthy, that they're doing something, you know, worthy of a film is beyond me, at least in 1996. Olivia Goldsmith, the novelist that this is based on, she's passed away. Hugh Wilson, the director, he's passed away. So, oh, wow. So there's no one left for me to hate but the cast members.
The cast members, I would say that 2 out of 3 of them did a very good job.
I would agree. I mean, given what they had to work with.
Who's the third in your opinion?
Well, Goldie Hawn was a hoot.
Goldie Hawn, yes.
Goldie Hawn was a hoot because she had... did she get collagen... for
yes,
the movie?
Yes. Because, she also did it in real life.
Yeah, I mean, it was hilarious because they played it up. She looked like she had balloon lips.
So the three first wives that we are recasting are Bette Midler as Brenda Cushman, Goldie Hawn as Elise Atchison, and Diane Keaton as Anne Paradise?
Yeah, Annie McDuggan Paradise.
Paradise. All right, so let's go with the first one, Bette Midler as Brenda Cushman. I'll go with mine first.
Pardon me while I shuffle my papers.
I went with Parker Posey.
Oh!
Because she is a woman of a certain age. She is currently 51, which is 1 year younger than Bette Midler was at the time. And she's also a singer. Parker Posey has a musical career as well as an acting career, which is very, very parallel to the career of Bette Midler.
And she can currently be seen in the reboot of Lost in Space now on Netflix, which I hear is very, very
good. We haven't watched it yet, but we hear good things. All right, so what do you think about the comparison between...
I think she's fine because...
You think she's fine as fuck?
Well, no, I mean, I think she's fine as a casting. Also, yes, fine as fuck. But I'm not a huge Bette Midler fan, but I do...
What about Beaches?
No, I'm not a fan. But I do acknowledge that she is a very talented singer.
What about The Rose?
And no. No, I don't like her. If I met her on the street, I probably...
What about For the Boys?
No, nothing, nothing. But I do acknowledge her talent, so that's all you're going to get out of me.
She's very talented. All right, and did you tell me yours?
So I'm going to go. My actress is of a similar age. She has got comedic chops, and she can sing, and she's vivacious, and we loved her since 1983 when we saw her as the best French kisser in her grade in National Lampoon's Vacation. I'm talking about Jane Krakowski.
Oh, yeah.
From 30 Rock, known as Jenna Maroney.
Oh, she's so good.
She's so good.
She's recently been in some TV commercials, but she needs to be in movies.
Yeah. She was in Kimmy Schmidt for several episodes.
The Invincible
Kimmy Unbreakable.
Schmidt? Unbreakable. The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. A very good TV show about a cult survivor.
But she's so funny.
She's
and I think that's what inspired me to recast her for that role.
I love it. All right, going on to the next one, Goldie Hawn, who portrayed Elise Atchison. And should I go ahead and go first?
Sure.
All right, I went with an actress named Naomi Watts. She originally came to my attention in Mulholland Drive, but has been a staple of American cinema for years. And I think she could probably pull off this role. She's also 50 years old, as opposed to Goldie Hawn's 51 at the time.
This is a tough recast. Goldie Hawn is one of those once-in-a-lifetime type actresses because... From
Kate Hudson?
Well, no. I'm sorry. I like Kate Hudson. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, you go back to her laugh-in days. I mean, Goldie Hawn was adorable and precious. Mm-hmm. You just fell in love with her. And
she's still precious to me.
She is. But she's funny as hell. And you can't manufacture that. That's kind of one of those natural things.
Yes.
And I tried to get as close as I could, given that age range that we're shooting for, that 50-year-old... kind of range. I went with somebody who did show some comedic chops in Romy and Michelle's high school reunion.
Oh, Lisa Kudrow.
No,
Mira Sorvino. Paul Sorvino's daughter.
Yeah, I could see because
that's good.
But for the role really being an aging Hollywood actress who's trying to retain her youth, I could see her playing
that part. She's mighty Aphrodite.
Yes, indeed.
Very cool. All right, we got one more. We've got the role of Diane Keaton, and I went with one of my favorite actresses. She was Sloane in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
I thought about casting her.
Her name is Mia Sara, and she was also in the title role in Queenie. If you haven't checked out Mia Sara's filmography, check her out. She's a very good actress, and also she's beautiful. Even still... And the visual comparison is uncanny.
I actually thought about doing a John Hughes recast.
Oh, yeah.
Using Mia Sara, Molly Ringwald.
Matthew Broderick.
And Ally Sheedy. That would have covered... Because, again, we're talking about actresses in their early 50s.
Right.
And there are a lot of really great actresses...
Who are now in their early 50s.
And so I gave that some thought, but I walked away from it. So I'm glad that you did pick her, because that was my original pick for that role. But I went with someone else who is in that age range. She's a little on the... a little bit older, but...
On the cusp?
She's still in her early 50s. People saw her in... God, Man of Steel.
Oh, yes, Diane Lane.
Diane Lane, because Diane Lane is gorgeous.
She's amazing.
And she can act, and she's great, and she's awesome. And I think
she was also Lori Darlin in Loathsome Dove.
And, you know, I got to say something about Diane Keaton. I love Diane Keaton. I thought she has just a great list of credits. In this movie, there's one scene where they're trying to raid, I think it was Bette Midler's ex-husband's office. Mm-hmm. Am I on the right spouse?
Yes.
And the ex-husband and his young woman come back in, and they're up in the office trying to find somewhere to hide. And at one point, Diane Keaton's just standing in the corner like a Muppet, just flailing her arms side to side.
Flailing gesticulation. Very good.
Yeah, that's on the director.
All right, so we have exhausted our recast for the recast continued, which brings us to the Chop Shopper Challenge. We had a pretty good one this week.
Did we?
War of the Roses. Yeah, we had...
good response, you mean?
Well, yeah, we had... well, tell me why you don't like this movie.
I walked out on this movie in high school.
Because
my friend Chris and I went and saw it. Chris, who is known as Captain Peon.
Captain Peon he on has Twitter. At Captain Peon.
He has a streaming radio show called Peon Radio. I recommend you listen to it on Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, if I'm not mistaken. But we went and saw it. He wanted to see it because it was the first movie to have the Die Hard 2 trailer.
And that's the only reason he went.
That's the only reason he went. And so we went and we watched I think we sat through at least 45 minutes of it, but it just got to be kind of ridiculous, so we walked out on it.
I know that the first time I saw this movie, I was being babysat by another couple, a pair of individuals who were adults who were babysitting me down the road. And the opening scene, well, not the opening scene, but like pretty close to the opening scene, there's like some hardcore fucking going on. And I was like, oh yeah. And they were like, oh no. And they turned it off. This is on Drift Creek Road in Silverton, Oregon. All right. So we are going to the Chop Shopper Challenge. We've got War of the Roses. It was directed by Danny DeVito. It has an 82% on Rotten Tomatoes. You don't walk out on 82%,
I did. Sean. I did.
And the roles that we are hypothetically recasting in the Chop Shopper Challenge is the role of Oliver Rose, originally portrayed by Michael Douglas, and Barbara Rose, originally portrayed by Kathleen Turner, and the role of Gavin D'Amato, originally portrayed by Danny DeVito. I think he didn't really stretch on his pseudonym on that one. Should I just do mine and then we'll get to the fans?
Yeah,
go for it. All right, so I'm doing all of them at once. We've got the original poster here, and then I did a little bit of not Photoshop. Oh yeah. I've got Catherine Pompeo, who is Gray from Grey's Anatomy. I've got Patrick Dempsey
from Grey's Anatomy.
McSteamy from Grey's Anatomy. And then for the role of Danny DeVito, I went with Andy Milonakis. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Andy Milonakis. He's a short guy who's really funny. And he looks younger than he is.
How old is he?
Well, he had that show where
let me tell you.
He was playing like a 10-year-old kid on
the
show.
He's 42 now.
Jeez.
Andy Milonakis is 42, but he's got a certain medical condition that makes him look younger
than he looks 22. So. He's got the Ralph Macchio disease.
He's got the Ralph Macchio. All right, so let's go to the other.
I got the Facebooks in front of me.
All right, tell me.
Friend of the show, Dana, has nominated the famous bromancers Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen as Oliver and Barbaro, with Leslie Jordan as Gavin.
What did she actually say about it, though?
Patrick and Ian have tremendous chemistry, and seeing them as bitchy soon-to-be ex-spouses would be a fun twist to the film.
Film. That's a throwback to our Irish episode.
It is, it is. A friend of the show, Tex, who was on the wrestling episode.
Nice.
He chimed in and cast Ryan Gosling as Michael Douglas, his character. Rachel McAdams as Kathleen Turner's character. And watching the smarmy couple from The Notebook go to war makes me smirk. And then, as a stroke of genius, he cast Patton Oswalt as Danny DeVito's character.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
All right, so Conan the Librarian chimed in. He sent me a personal message, which I feel pretty fortunate. And I'm just glowing over here because Conan sent me a message. And he said, Kathleen Turner is replaced by June Squibb. Do you guys know who June Squibb is? She's an old lady. She was in Nebraska playing the wife of...
Bruce Dern?
Bruce Dern, awesome. In Nebraska. And Michael Douglas is now Michael Cera. So you've got June Squibb and Michael Cera getting divorced. And then the role of Danny DeVito is portrayed by Michael Trejo. Excuse me, Danny Trejo.
Danny Trejo.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I love it. I love it.
That's what we do here. And so we have any more chime-ins on the... All right, so Joey Poole chimed in, frequent guest on the show, frequent contributor, and he said that it would be a urban redux of the show, or the movie, and the roles would be portrayed by Jay-Z as Michael Douglas's character, Beyonce as Kathleen Turner's character, and then Solange would be the Danny DeVito character, and she would come in and kick him in the face.
I can see it.
All right. So the final thing that we need to do today is the honey roast, right? We're doing the honey roast.
Yeah, new segment on the show. It needs its own intro music or sound effects.
It's just the sound of honey dripping.
Well, that or
on
just,
a roast.
Or like roasted, like a fire crackling, yes. And little roasted nuts.
Some of those sound effects.
no pressure, Andrew.
So we're honey roasting Dustin Hoffman. Who wants to go first? Sean, go first.
I'll go first. I will roast him for The Graduate.
Honey roast.
I will honey roast. I will honey roast him for The Graduate. It gave.
Here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. You
know, yeah, I mean the
heaven loves you more than you will know.
Whoa, hey, whoa, whoa! Hey. the infinite replay of that song aside, the movie gave hope to horny little boys everywhere.
To get some cougar action?
Yes, yes. He set the stage for the whole cougar movement with this film.
So we blame that on Dustin Hoffman.
Well, there's no blame. There's nothing wrong with cougar action.
There's nothing wrong with it.
That's right. I'm not ageist.
We are not ageist here on Cinema Chop Shop.
But no, he was great in that. No, I guess honorable mention should go to Tootsie.
Tootsie, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tootsie was a groundbreaking role.
Another groundbreaking role for him because that was unheard of.
At the time, it was proto Mrs. Doubtfire, you guys.
Yeah, it's a great film. If you've never seen Tootsie, watch it and try to watch it in context. The whole soap opera culture, as well as that, and then the you know, the gender bending aspect of it was very ahead of its time.
Like soap?
Yeah. Like soap.
Also, all of these old movies that we talk about, you should watch them with a certain context, mm-hmm. right? You don't have to watch them as though they are a good movie now. You just have to watch them for what they are and appreciate them for what they are and also realize that they are a product of the time, right? All right, so my honey roast of Dustin Hoffman is a good one. It's Captain Hook from the movie Hook. He's so good. He had to play opposite Robin Williams, Can you imagine trying to bring the energy to be even close to Robin Williams? And he did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I think that that's a good pick. I agree with you. Robin Williams is just chewing scenery.
However, you do not like that movie. It's not for you.
It wasn't for me. But yeah. but at the same time, I do acknowledge. But I do acknowledge Dustin Hoffman's part in that. He did play a good foppish hook. I don't know if he was really sinister enough.
He scared me.
Did he now?
Yeah, I'm scared. All right, so we have exhausted the Honey Roast and the Cinema Chop Shopper Challenge, and that will bring us to the wrap-up, where we like to thank the guests. We have no guests today, so thank you, no one. And also my occasionally frequent co-host, Sean the Brew Boss, shout it out.
Yes, I will plug it out. Anybody who's in the Florence area, we're doing our 4th anniversary / customer appreciation party at the brewery.
On April 21st.
April 21st, we'll have a new release of a beer collaboration with another brewery from Greenville called the 8th State, formerly known as Upstate Brewing.
Ah, I was wondering what that was.
Yes, very good. It's going to be a pineapple milkshake IPA.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
Yes.
I want it right now. Can we have it right now?
No.
It hasn't been happened yet. All right, so also, thank you to Andrew, the engineer, producer, the Canadian in your brain again, Andrew Tay.
First off, let me say that's seminarbrewing.com.
Yeah, I said that like 3 times.
Okay, never mind. Yeah. Thank you, Travis.
And
it bears,
also,
it bears repeating.
Hey, listeners. Everyone. And then the podcast itself. We have to plug the podcast. We are on most of the places where you can get podcasts. Just look up Cinema Chop Shop. That's where you can find us. We're on iTunes, all those other places. Also, we have a Twitter account. We are at Cinema Chop Shop. That's where we post about the Chop Shopper challenges. And then we're on Facebook. It's facebook.com/CinemaChopShop. And then finally, our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. And anything else we need to plug?
We just need to thank those listeners.
Yeah, thank you, listeners. Chop Shoppers, you do it. We do it. We love you. All right. The last thing we need to do is
watch Chop Retrofit.